Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Hello all, and welcome to the Beyond the Batcave podcast, the Batman-centric DC movies podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andy Piper.
And I'm Taylor Jackson. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome everybody. We're excited to be back for another episode this week. We've been recovering a little bit, the aftermath of the great San Diego Comic-Con 2016. And in our recovery process, we've decided to bring you a little bit of the leftover news. There were some Batman things that we overlooked from that last San Diego Comic-Con. So we're going to talk about them a little bit today.
Yeah. And so first thing we wanted to talk about, there were a couple additional trailers that, aside from the big three, which we talked about in the last episode and which got most of the attention, the first of which, and my favorite in personal opinion, was a new full, I guess our first full-length trailer for the Lego Batman movie. Andy, what did you think of it?
You know, I really like this trailer. We just watched it a couple minutes ago, right before we started recording, and I couldn't keep the smile off my face the whole time. There was just lots to laugh at. And I think lots of it just has to do with that classic Lego movie sense of humor. Like, I really love the Lego movie, and Batman was a big highlight of that, but he wasn't really a main character in that movie. He was more of the comic relief or a supporting character. But it seems like they're doing a good job of not having that go stale by introducing lots of new elements and having a lot of fun really exploring Batman's world. And so that's the reason I couldn't keep the smile off my face, because I was having such a good time just looking at everything, like that scene where he's swimming in the pool with the dolphins and he's eating lobster in the kitchen. I love how he wears his dressing gown with his bat mask on all the time, just the cowl. It's just beautiful. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a very different Batman, I mean, than we see in other mediums. But it's fun because I feel like this movie definitely plays to his strengths. We saw that in the Lego movie. It kind of just like addresses a lot of the ironic things that some people may think or poke fun at about Batman.
Yeah. Has a lot of fun with the character.
It does have a lot of fun with the character. And just, I think the plot is really great. If you haven't seen it yet, go ahead. It's wonderful. I think the plot point that they chose of him trying to take care of a son sort of figure is really great, because this is the least likely Batman that you would choose to raise such a son.
Doesn't seem very responsible. He's kind of a kid himself.
Exactly.
So that's really cool. I like Robin. I'm a big Robin fan. So I'd kind of forgotten that Michael Cera was the voice of Robin, which is hilarious because I'd never really hear Michael Cera talk in a voice that's not like the Michael Cera voice. You know
that's
what I mean?
That's true.
Like,
I didn't even know that was Michael Cera. That's awesome.
Yeah, because you hear him in Scott Pilgrim and Arrested Development, and he always sounds exactly the same. But I really like what he's doing here. It doesn't sound like Michael Cera, which is good. There's lots of very recognizable actors that are actually doing something very different from what you know them for.
Yeah. Definitely.
Zach Galifianakis is the Joker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we haven't heard him talk yet, but
We heard him laugh. Yeah. So we know he does that.
I don't think that's how Zach Galifianakis normally laughs. Not that I'm an aficionado on all things Zach Galifianakis.
I don't personally follow him around day to day, but, you know, I agree. That's probably not
him. Well, the thing is, he contacted me in person and told me he was doing a different take for the Joker. He wasn't just going to play Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, so is that so?
You heard it here first on the Beyond the Batcave podcast. Zach Galifianakis is taking a new approach to the Joker.
I'm just going to wait.
The source is Andy Piper.
Oh, okay.
So I'll gladly take credit for that.
Now one thing, I mean, we're used to a big cast. Like, from the Lego movie, there was a pretty big cast there as well.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I was curious if you had any insights on is they don't really hint to who this Robin is. In the Lego Batman movie. I mean, it's an orphan.
I thought I heard Master Grayson, but maybe that's just me remembering something, imagination.
I don't remember hearing it. The only clue I get from Dick Grayson is that he's an orphan.
Yeah.
And Batman adopts him, essentially, which is, you know, not word for word.
Yeah, Jason Todd has that too, though.
Yeah, that's true. So, I don't know. It could be a new Robin, too, because he doesn't necessarily act like any of the previous Robins.
Yeah, or, but then again, this Batman doesn't really act like any other Batman.
That's true.
They do new takes on the characters, which I really appreciate. That's one thing that is great about characters that are as old as this, is that every interpretation is valid, because they've all been done so many times. Like, I'm saying this is new and unique, and I do think it's unique, but it's close to things that we've seen in Batman 66, or maybe Batman the Brave and the Bold. And I just really love that lightheartedness, the having fun with Batman, the pointing out the funny things about it they're going with, because there's really a lot to laugh about.
Yeah, it's almost like those feelings you have when you look back on Brave and the Bold or Batman 66. Mm-hmm. It may have not actually been like that, but it feels that way to you, and now it's just kind of playing off of that feeling and running with it.
Yeah, anyway, this one looks really funny. I just wanted to point out that even in Lego stop-motion form, seeing Batman running down a hallway leading the Justice League gave me chills up and down my spine. That was a beautiful sight.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It was really cool. Oh, yeah. So remember that joke where he's like, Robin gets slammed into the front of the Batmobile after Batman hits the brakes and Robin goes flying forward and hits the front of the Batmobile. And the Batman's like, I'm just gonna put my arm in front of you. I'm just ease out of here. I swear that my dad or my mom did that to me when I was little and I can't remember, and that made it so funny when I saw him do that. I was like, that's such a total like parent move.
Yep.
Batman's growing up with his useless parent tropes. Like, life doesn't give you seatbelts, though, so
that's true.
Just got threw out that arm.
How true that is. All right, well, anything else to say about Lego Batman?
Not really. It looks really great and made me want to watch the Lego movie again.
True.
Just watching it. But I'm excited for that one. Let me look up when it's coming out real quick.
I believe it's February. It'll actually be the first of, I guess, if the Justice League is in it, it'll be the next Batman movie we get.
Yeah, February 10th. Okay, that's the exact date. So keeping a lookout for that. February 10th, 2017. I'll be looking forward to it for sure.
Awesome. So next on our slate of Comic-Con news, we also got a trailer for the Justice League Action. So if you don't know, this is a mini-series. Well, it's a series of miniature episodes, I guess you could say.
They're like Teen Titans Go. They're just shorter.
Yeah, so they're short episodes. They're about 11 minutes. There is some footage along with the trailer. Some have some commentary with directors and producers. And the way they described it, which I thought was kind of good, is it kind of just essentially skips the first act of an episode, kind of like the setup and the getting things rolling.
Yeah.
And it kind of jumps straight to the action. And so kind of the fun thing about Justice League Action is that you get different pairings every time. You'll get some team-ups that you wouldn't normally get in a developed series, because it only has to last 11 minutes and you don't have to address it again, the next time it happens. We can see a lot of more of like the comic type hero with the serious type hero. And it can be a lot of fun. And I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. What are your thoughts about Justice League Action, Andy?
Well, one thing that I'm really happy about is that this looks like a show that's poised to wrangle in the next generation of Batman fans and DC Comics fans. Because I think, I don't really love to talk Marvel versus DC. But if we're going to, this is one thing that Marvel has been killing DC at for the past several years is animation. There's all kinds of content for young children to watch on the Marvel side of things, whereas DC, ever since maybe Young Justice fizzled out, there hasn't been too much going on. There's been Teen Titans Go and something that's escaping my mind right now.
Yeah.
But I think this will be great. It has all the makings of a show that kids will really love, because it does skip that first act, which is cool.
Yeah.
And even just watching that trailer, it looks like it has all the best things that I loved about Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Batman the Brave and the Bold, and it just kind of smashes them together into a nice conglomeration, nice smorgasbord of fun and action.
Well put. Yeah, no, I kind of like what you said there, and I think one thing that'll be good for it too, kind of talking about that, it's almost educational in a sense of, because I remember growing up, I would think about, I liked Batman the most, but I have to admit, like, growing up, I had to say that I liked Marvel as a universe a little more, just because I knew more people.
Yeah.
And so when I started to like DC more, But even before that, I could name, six DC heroes and, 20 Marvel heroes. And so I think this is great because with the new films that are coming out, you have, a whole new generation of people going into Justice League action that really don't know a lot of the characters. Like, they may have not even seen, Plastic Man or Firestorm before. And so I think it's great because it's with these short episodes, you can have tons of characters. There were people from the trailer that I didn't even recognize, per se. Maybe it's just because they're stylized differently, but...
Yeah, the character designs look really cool. They do look like they're geared a little bit towards children, but I think they look really great. And that's a good point that you brought up, is that, man, everybody was in that trailer. I saw all kinds of people that I haven't seen for a while. I saw, Vixen in there. I'm kind of mixing it up with the Justice League Dark trailer in my head now, but I saw tons of people. You mentioned Plastic Man was there.
Some staples. Mr. Freeze. We saw Lex Luthor.
Everybody.
There's lots of people.
Brainiac was there. I forgot about that. So all kinds of people were there. Anyway. Yeah, so this looks like it's poised to bring up a new generation of DC fans. That makes me happy because animation was my introduction to the DC universe, too.
That's true.
And I think that's a very accessible front door for a lot of people out there. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not too much to say about it. It doesn't look like there's a whole lot of plot or content to go over with this. It was just pure action.
Yeah, don't expect, moving plot stories and deep mysteries, probably.
Mm-hmm.
This is just some fun to introduce you to some characters, throw some punches, and have some fun.
All right, cool. So let's talk a little bit about the new DC animated movies. They did announce the next two or three at Comic-Con, those being Justice League Dark and Teen Titans, The Judas Contract, which I think are both interesting choices and both overdue. The Judas Contract, I've heard people talking about making that one animated for a while, and same with Justice League Dark. There have been whispers of that for years, as long as I've been following rumors. There have been people talking Justice League Dark.
And I think there's been mumblings that we've known for a while that they're going to, but this is the first kind of footage that we've seen and kind of the most in-depth look we've gotten into it. Justice League Dark looks, it's very different from what you would expect. I didn't know much about, the team going into it and kind of watching the trailers and some of the behind-the-scenes footage and making of. It's just a lot different of a style. It almost, if you didn't know much about it, you might not even know it's DC. If you didn't see Batman there, that sort of thing.
That's true. Even though this lineup of the Justice League Dark has some of my Dark Horse favorite characters. I really love Zatanna. She's one of my favorites. And then Deadman is really amazing. Etrigan the Demon.
Mm-hmm.
He's cool. Wait, did we see Etrigan the Demon also in Justice League Action, or am I imagining that? I can't remember.
Might have. That action trailer
everybody,
so fast.
Yeah, it was in it.
I have to watch it frame by frame just to take a roster down or something.
But Etrigan the Demon is awesome. For those of you who are not familiar with him, I would recommend there's an episode of Batman the Brave and the Bold about Etrigan, and it's pretty hysterical. Because, Etrigan can only talk in rhymes when he's in his demon form. And so it's pretty funny.
I can imagine. And one thing that's cool, which is a great move for this movie, because you could feel that there may not be a lot of appeal because you don't know anybody, but it seems as though Batman is kind of leading the Justice League Dark, or at least gets them started on the right foot. And that's fun because it's someone that all of our characters can relate to, or all the viewers can relate to. They all know who Batman is. And it's kind of fun to see him in this movie because it's kind of out of his elements. He's always been very detective, very fact-based. And most of these characters, I think, watching the trailer and the villains, it's almost entirely magic-based. And what's kind of cool, looking at some of the making-up footage, is just the animation style, too. They chose, because it's different to see in a comic book and how do you translate, magic entirely into the animated realm. And they decided to go with kind of the runes and seeing the visual runes whenever magic is used. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
I think it's really cool. Very Dr. Fate-esque.
Yeah, that's a good analogy there.
So one thing that I think is going to be cool about this is that it's interesting. one of my favorite things about Batman as well is that sometimes he has a little bit of an abrasive personality. I like watching him play off other people, see how their different personalities interact with Batman. I love how I think he's going to fit in maybe better in Justice League Dark than he does in the Justice League, because these are lots of other people that don't really stand on ceremony. Like, Constantine doesn't care about offending anybody at any point. And so I think that'll suit Batman maybe a little better than trying to have to, you know, pull his verbal punches when he's talking to maybe some more sensitive people in the league. Batman and Zatanna have romantic history, so I don't know if they'll pursue that at all in this movie. We'll see about that.
It looks like Zatanna and Constantine might have a thing going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they could play both cards, so.
So that'll be interesting to see. I'm excited for that one. Do you know when that one's coming out, Taylor?
I do not.
Let me look it up real quick. Okay. Yeah, we'll get it.
But yeah, no, I really like what you said just while you're looking that up about the playing the characters off of each other in Batman. You kind of see that, like, there's a little shot there where Deadman, who's kind of a more comic relief type of character, he says, "Wait, Batman knows who I am?" Like, that's, you know, that was cool for him to just kind of know who Batman is, because Batman's kind of like this big honcho in the superhero world, and mm-hmm. So these guys are not, you know, big honcho, so they can kind of look up to Batman a little bit. Perfect. So yeah, I think that's later this year, so that should be fun. Anything else you wanted to say about Justice League Dark?
No, I think I've about said what I need to say.
Alright, perfect. And then the last one that we mentioned, just as far as the Comic-Con news and trailers, is Teen Titans attends the Judas Contract. Like you said, they've been talking about it for quite some time. There's a couple speculations. We don't know a lot of the plot as far as what it's about. We just know that's the name and that they're making it. But some speculate that it could be a sequel to Justice League versus Teen Titans. But the most likely original story that it's going to pull from is from the graphic novel entitled, an story arc called The Judas Contract. And that's a pretty big one, with a lot of big names and big story arcs that have been pulled into the original Teen Titans animated series and things like that. So that has Deathstroke and his daughter Tara, and kind of the just basically, I'm kind of looking at the Wikipedia thing here as far as the description of that. So it featured a psychopathic girl named Tara with the power to manipulate Earth and all Earth-related materials. She infiltrates the Titans in order to destroy them. It's a good story. Won a Comic Buyer's Guide Fan Award for Favorite Comic Book Story. It was later reprinted. Some big things happen at the end. Robin adopts the identity of Nightwing. Wally West gives up being Kid Flash. And also has a new member, Jericho, Deathstroke's other son. So there's a lot of things going on, but it looks like they have some great source material to pull from. I don't know, do you have any thoughts about the Judas Contract?
So the way these DC animated movies have been going lately, at least the last, I don't know, 7 or 8, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but there's been a set of movies that are kind of in continuity, which have been, you know, Son of Batman, like the Justice League ones, Throne of Atlantis, then Batman versus Robin. Those ones seem to be, let's draw inspiration from the comics and craft it into original story. But there's also been these one-off movies that are straight adaptations, and I think this is going to be one of those. So, for example, The Flashpoint Paradox was pretty much beat for beat the comic. Same thing with Killing Joke, and so I think this one will probably be more in that vein. That would be my guess. I know we don't have too much information about it yet.
I think if it were going to be more of an adaptation, they would probably just name it something different.
Yeah,
because the ones that you named, you know, Flashpoint came from Flashpoint, Killing Joke came from Killing Joke. So that logic is sound there, that the Judas Contract would pretty much try to retell the story in an animated form.
Yeah, so anyway, we're excited for that one to come out too. We'll probably talk about it more as it comes up.
Yeah, we don't really have
it's a little bit far into the future. Not too much on that yet, but it is announced, so everybody can be excited about that. So, without further ado, shall we move into our Justice League episode reviews of the day?
I believe we shall.
Okay.
So, our next episode, if you've been following along, is In Blackest Night. It's a two-part episode, as most are. So, brief summary of the episode. So, you encounter... Well, I guess you start off in space. and a space court justice has sent the Manhunters to go retrieve the Green Lantern and bring him back, John Stewart, because of a crime that he has committed. And we do not know at the start which crime this has been. Turns out that he inadvertently blew up a planet, unknowingly and accidentally. But he admits to committing this crime, although it was an accident, and so he it's a story of the Justice League trying to go and stand up for their friend John Stewart, because they know he would not do such a thing. And that's what ensues. I guess to kind of finish out the plot, they find out that it was a hoax, that essentially it was an illusion that the planet was destroyed, in efforts for the Manhunters to give the Black Mark essentially to the Green Lantern Corps so that they could access the power of the Green Lanterns. Justice League do work on the Manhunters, and fireworks and happiness ensue thereafter. I don't know, did I miss anything big there, Andy, as far as an overall synopsis?
I don't think so. That's a great synopsis.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, it was a really good introduction to the Green Lantern Corps, and it was in the fourth and fifth episodes, respectively, of Justice League. And one thing that I thought was cool about this is I was saying on a different episode that the Green Lantern mythos is a big part of the DC universe. Like, it encompasses a lot of it, because these Green Lanterns are to protect all of space. So essentially, if you have a story where anything takes place off of Earth, usually there's Green Lanterns involved. And so it's good to establish the rules of the game early on in the series, so later on, when more Green Lanterns show up, then we're not surprised. We know why they're there. So I thought this was cool. A good introduction to that.
Yeah, definitely. I really like what they did here with Jon Stewart, too, because as I expressed in the last episode, that we reviewed, it was hard for me to really get on the bandwagon with Green Lantern. Not that he did anything bad, per se, but it was hard for me, personally, to see him as super likable. And so, what I really liked was it starts off with him just kind of, like, walking down the streets of downtown and seeing how he interacts with the people, stopping, you know, petty crime and stuff like that. And it shows you that Jon Stewart is just, like, really perhaps the most down-to-earth of the Justice League. And you obviously wouldn't expect him to have perpetrated some intergalactic crime.
Yeah, I was surprised by how long that scene went on, and I think you hit the nail on the head. The purpose of that was to show us who Jon Stewart is, how he interacts with his former childhood, his former life. He runs into that old high school teacher of his, I think it is. They take that kid to the barber, just like lots of normal stuff. And I was surprised that it was like probably the first 5 to 7 minutes of the episode. It was just Jon Stewart walking around, you know, trying to shoot a three, totally misses. Oh, yeah, sorry.
he tried to shoot it from like the other downtown, like the downtown next to your downtown. So I don't blame him for missing. He hit the rim, you know.
That's true.
But yeah, that was a really long intro, that scene, but kind of brought us down to who Jon Stewart is, like you said. I thought it was a good story. I was pleased with how engaging it was. You know, with the entirety of the story mostly hanging around like a court scene, essentially, it could have been a lot more boring than it was. But I was surprised at how engaged I was, both in the court and out of the court. I just thought it kind of had a good balance of action as well as kind of a driving story that kind of kept things going.
Yeah. So one thing about this episode is there was no Batman in it, which, you know, I never like it when Batman's not there.
I was disappointed.
You know, he was busy.
Yeah.
He was busy.
There was also no Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So it was just Martian Manhunter, Superman, Hot Girl, The Flash, and Green Lantern.
You know, one of my criticisms of this episode, sorry to move to the bad so fast.
That's okay.
I mean, I don't think there's a ton. But for what this episode could have been, I think it kind of failed in that it was supposed to be centered around Jon Stewart, and the plot was fixated on him, but all the best character moments came from everybody else.
That's true.
Superman had some awesome moments. Hot Girl had great moments. I was rolling with laughter when The Flash was trying to be a lawyer. But, you know, Jon Stewart was just kind of morose, down, trodden the whole time. I think there are better episodes that serve his character a little bit better.
Yeah, because, you know, that opening scene does so much for Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I like the opening scene.
But after that, you're right, it doesn't. He doesn't really do much of anything to show us.
Until the end.
Until the end, obviously. And so, yeah, you're right, that huge middle chunk of the arc is...
He's given up on himself.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, you know, is nice that he's that humble and...
He truly believed that he had blown up a planet, and so he was submitting himself to, you know, take the punishment for that, to own up to his crimes. But I just felt like maybe his character could have been served a little bit better in another way. And one reason for that maybe is this, in the comics, this was not originally a Jon Stewart storyline. This is a pirated Hal Jordan storyline, including the Manhunters and everything. So... there's that. I actually kind of went on a crazy Green Lantern binge after this episode. Like, I was reading all kinds of comics, and
okay.
I even watched the old 2011 movie. It's beautiful. It wasn't great, but I liked it.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when I kind of revisit it. It's not like, I don't know, I don't think it's deserving of all the bad that it gets. It's definitely not the greatest movie, but anyways.
Yeah, one thing that it did remind me of, though, that I was a little bit disappointed of looking at this in hindsight is... there is so much to that Green Lantern world. Like, this does a good job for, you know, a 2-episode arc, but there's still so much we could learn about, and I really, really like it. For example, in the comics, Jon Stewart, he's an architect, he was a Marine, and so he's got this really soldier attitude, and as a Green Lantern, he learns to be a little bit more autonomous, which I think is a very cool character arc. And also, you'll see in the comics, maybe this is just a function of them having more time to draw or something, but because he's an architect, the constructs that come out of his ring are all meticulous. They all have, there's nuts and bolts and screws and pulleys holding everything in place. None of it's illogical. His constructs aren't hollow, as opposed to like a Hal Jordan where he's just throwing planes and trucks and machine guns at you.
Yeah.
Or even like Guy Gardner where it's just like wild energy crackling out of his ring, flying everywhere. It really matches their personalities. And I thought, maybe we could have seen a little bit more personality from John here, but again, I think a lot of that comes later in the series. We'll get to episodes where we talk about that. But
yeah, definitely. You mentioned how some of the other characters really kind of steal the show in the sense of having some good character moments. One of those I really thought was good was when they're on their way to, is it Altiris 5?
Ajuris.
Ajuris, that's what it is. And Hawk Girl says something about you humans, and she says it to Superman, and it's kind of funny because, you know, he's not a human.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, I'm sorry. And Superman says, no, don't worry, I take it as a compliment. And I just thought that was really cool, especially in the light of, like, Batman v Superman. That's definitely kind of a story about him finding his place and kind of, am I accepted by the people I'm trying to serve? And so, I don't know, I just thought in light of the recent movies, that was a kind of great one-liner from Superman to get more insight into what his desires are for the people.
Yeah, I'd be happy to see Henry Cavill Superman say something like that, you know, after his inevitable resurrection and hopefully his more gleeful acceptance of his homeworld.
Yeah.
His adopted homeworld.
Right. So, I guess we can kind of delve into some of the things that maybe we didn't like so much. We kind of mentioned some of them already. One thing, I'm not as well-versed in Green Lantern as maybe you are, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I often realize that Green Lanterns do is when they take on their ring or off their ring, it's somewhat like connected to their suit, right?
Yeah, that was a goof in this episode. That stood out to me. I mean, it's not a huge thing, but I'm not sure why they made that choice. Maybe just because he was in space and he needed a cool space outfit to wear. But yeah, their uniform is a construct of their ring, generally.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. So that was a little goofy to me. I didn't realize it at first. It was more like halfway through the episode. Wait, why is he in a suit?
Yeah, exactly.
Other things that I noticed, something I laughed at was immediately after they stopped the Manhunters, there are fireworks going off right behind... the place that they saved, Oa.
Yeah, on Oa.
The fireworks going off. And I just thought that was a little much for me. It's like, yay, the Justice League saved the day again. Like, we knew they would, so we prepared these fireworks.
That's funny.
And so I thought that was a little much for me.
I'll have to go back and watch that again. But I didn't see it the first time.
It was, like, instantaneous. It wasn't like they had a parade afterwards on Naboo or anything. It was, like, right away, here's some fireworks.
Good Phantom Menace pull.
Thanks. This isn't necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, but... And we'll probably see this a lot in future episodes as well. But I just thought it was funny how anyone and everyone of the male gender who runs into Hawker Girl has something to say about Hawker Girl. Everyone's got a thing to say about her, whether it's the Green Lantern saying, yeah, she knows how to fight. Or, you know, Flash trying to get on her good side. That sort of thing.
You know, which, she's a memorable personality.
She is.
This is one of my favorite scenes from the whole show. When Hot Girl fights off the five Green Lanterns all by herself.
Oh, yeah.
No weapons, obviously.
And Kilowog's just sitting there the whole time.
Yeah, I like the Kilowog character moment. Kilowog's one of my favorite Green Lanterns. He's really cool. Although there was some weird stuff going on with his ring. If you look really closely, like... During those scenes, his ring is, like, switching hands and stuff, and then suddenly he's wearing no ring. Just animation goofs that caught my eye a little bit.
Yeah, and talking about introducing us to the Justice League Corps, I thought it was great. Some of, the, like, the testimonials that they used in court with both Kilowog and one of the Guardians, just kind of, they asked him, you know, like, what is the purpose of a Green Lantern? Like, what do you do? And so, because I thought that was a great moment.
Yeah, that was good exposition in context.
Yeah.
Which was good.
To kind of just tell us, you know, I may not know who a Green Lantern is. Why is he wearing that suit? Why is he wearing a ring?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a great, easy way to sneak that into the plot.
So one thought I have, maybe kind of closing, well, not closing, but I'm thinking that the Green Lantern Corps movie is slated for 2020, so 4 years from now. I'm one of the people that I would love to see Jon Stewart on the big screen because he was the first Green Lantern I ever knew because of this show. That would just be, you know, a childhood dream of mine to see Jon Stewart up there. I think that would be awesome. I know there's a lot of people that don't like Jon Stewart's character. They think he's kind of wooden and not too exciting, but I'm behind that 100%. I really love the idea of it.
Do you think it's the most likely candidate for the Witch Green Lantern?
You know, I think it's likely that we're going to see Jon Stewart because the movie has been officially titled Green Lantern Corps and not Green Lantern. So I think we're going to see more than one for sure. I think maybe we'll see Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll find out. There's been no casting news still, so who knows?
True. One question I have about Green Lanterns, because I don't know a lot. Like we see in the Green Lantern movie that he's... Do we know that who hands down the ring to Hal Jordan? Do we know who was the Green Lantern before that?
It's Abin Sur.
Abin Sur. Okay.
Yeah, he's that purple alien. Mm-hmm. Depending on which comic you're reading, there's lots of different stuff he was doing when he got killed. The most memorable one for me is called Green Lantern Secret Origin. So if any of you are out there wanting to become a Green Lantern fan, that's my recommendation for you. Read Green Lantern's Secret Origin. It's a great, great introduction to Green Lanterns and to Hal Jordan specifically. And it's got a great emotional storyline throughout that it really tugs at my heartstrings. Because I feel like I relate a lot with Hal Jordan. He's kind of a relatable guy in his character flaws. He's a very flawed human being. But that's my recommendation for that.
Now, the reason I bring that up is just... I'm not super familiar with the timeline of the Green Lanterns. Yeah. Are they all in one continuous timeline? Does, like, one come before the other? I don't want to turn this into a Green Lantern cast, but,
you know what? You can go off and start the... What's our podcast called again? Beyond the Green Lantern Cave. That's what you can have.
Core.
Beyond the Core. So here's what happens. Hal Jordan is the first human Green Lantern. They select Guy Gardner as his potential backup. And then after that, Jon Stewart is his potential backup because Guy Gardner gets, like, horrifically injured or something. I can't remember what happens to him. And then after that, Kyle Rayner is selected as the last of the Green Lanterns after the events of Emerald Twilight, I think it is. And then after Green Lantern Rebirth, where Hal Jordan comes back from the dead, they all kind of exist at the same time as Green Lanterns, and it's kind of a celebration of all the great Green Lantern history. That's another good read if you're a more seasoned Green Lantern fan.
Great. I was just curious if that would give us any insight into which Green Lantern we might see.
I can't remember very, very well. I don't think we see Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, or Kyle Rayner in this series. I think John Stewart's the only Green Lantern from Earth that we ever see.
I believe you're right.
Okay. But anyway.
Awesome. Well, closing thoughts on the episode. I mean, if you had to give it, you know, out of batarangs, is that how we rate these things?
Well, I think every episode's a little different. I'm going to rate this one on
Green Lantern
Green Lantern power rings. So I will give this one a good, I'd probably say 7 of 13 Green Lantern 13. Power rings.
How am I supposed to come up on the fly with that number with your outlandish
numbers? You can use, I'll translate. I say this is, I'll give it a solid, it hovers between a B minus and a C plus for me, I think, because I saw the potential of what it could be. And maybe that's a problem with all Green Lantern media, is the comics of Green Lantern are so great that I'm always comparing what we get to the comics, and it's not been brought to life in a satisfactory way for me. I don't think this episode fully did the Green Lantern Corps justice or John Stewart justice, so I'll give it whatever is between a B minus and a C plus.
All right.
A B minus.
Well, 6 out of 13 Green Lantern
powers. Seven out of 13.
Oh, I'm sorry. I would rate it, I guess, just slightly more higher. Just probably a solid B for me. I also kind of, now that we talk about it too, I see that potential that it had. I was always kind of waiting for Jon Stewart to do something, you know, during that full,
It's long frustrating because he has great moments in other episodes.
Yeah.
But not so much this one.
Right.
Even his actual, we didn't talk about his moment. His moment when the chief manhunter finally infiltrates the core of Oa, gets into the central battery, and John Stewart, he recites the Green Lantern Oath, and somehow this like sucks the power back out of that guy. I don't know. It was just kind of a contrived moment for me. It didn't fully land.
It didn't seem like it took much out of him. You expect something of that magnitude to take some like sacrifice and like maybe some scars.
Yeah.
Like he kind of like walks in there, you know, cites the national anthem and just like gets the power back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you're right. It's kind of anticlimactic. So even when he does have his moment, it's not fully satisfying. But I give it a solid B, because I also see the potential it had to be a lot more boring than it was. A court story could just have a lot less action and be a lot less engaging, but I thought it was very engaging, very driven, and got me to see a great side of Jon Stewart.
Hey, well, that is amazing. Thank you very much for your thoughts, Taylor, on this episode, which again was In Blackest Night. Little did they know, it's not the blackest night the Green Lantern Corps would ever face.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so that'll do it for this episode, I think. We don't have any listener feedback this time.
We did get one comment on our Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just pull that up here real quick, just so we can give a quick shout-out.
Yeah, for sure.
Perfect. While we're pulling that up, this week, ideally, by the time you hear this episode, Suicide Squad will be upon us. The red carpet is tonight, Monday night, so it's actually here. Great things are going on. There's pretty much every push notification I have from every news source is talking about the Suicide Squad. It's highly anticipated, and we're very excited to see it.
So we're not going to be able to see it together, unfortunately, but on Thursday night, you guys can look out. I'll be putting up a short, spoiler-free review episode, and then we'll post our full review later next week. Okay, so this listener feedback comes from Jeffrey Fishbach. I hope I'm saying that right. But he posts on the Facebook page, I just found your podcast searching for Batman podcasts, and I've listened to my first two episodes yesterday. Love it. Keep up the awesome work. Well, thank you very much, Jeffrey. I wonder which two episodes he listened to. Depending on which two episodes it was, you might have a very different experience from any other two episodes, really.
So stay tuned.
Okay.
Try to keep things fresh. I'll be on the Batcave.
Well, thank you very much, Jeffrey. That means a lot to us. We're doing it for people like you out there who love to just chew on their Batman content food.
Content food.
Universe.
Go to your local store and get some content food. Or your local podcast. Anyways, so that's going to wrap things up for us here. This is episode 13 of Beyond the Batcave. Enjoy Suicide Squad. Like Andy said, he'll give you the first reactions, and then into the early happenings of next week, we will give you our full review. So stay tuned, and stay classy, Bat fans.